Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
We can't do it alone. Welcome to MPH Radio. As your host, the voice of MPH, we welcome you to another episode of Missing Pages of History, as well as we welcome you to African History Month. Some may say black, we say African, because that's where we are. We're going to continue our journey down this road of liberation as we continue to talk about history, talk about the behavior of our people, the actions of our people, the thoughts of our people, and the victories of our people, and how we can continue to make a better world for all mankind. Today on MPH Radio, which is the 20th of February 2021, we will talk about giving you something to think about, followed by MPH Black Men Fact, then a statement to the community by Mr. Alex Joyner. And then we'll follow it with our today's theme, which is what's going on in the nick of your woods. That's right. We want to know what's going on in the nick of your woods. So that's the order for today, and to all the communities who are underserved and not being represented in the major media, we speak to you, as well as we speak to truth to power. So that's our agenda today. Come and join us by dialing in at 1-818-337-0016, and we We'd like to hear your voices. We'd like to hear your views. We'd like to for you to share your experiences with us. So please do that. So right now, we're going to ask you to take out a pen and a piece of paper, and we're going to give you something to think about as we talk about this concept of freedom. As we often say, freedom is a concept that since the beginning of life, man and woman have been arguing about what is it. They have fought and died for it, and they continue to struggle to try to get a better understanding of this concept. What is freedom? So right now, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about one concept of freedom as it relates to Brother Matui J. Ather. They stated that true freedom is impossible without a mind made free by discipline. Let me read that statement again. Mr. Ather stated that true freedom is impossible without a mind made free by discipline. In other words, I wonder, can you have freedom without being disciplined? Is that possible? What y'all think about that concept? Now look at even Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson has a concept of freedom. What is his concept of freedom? Mike Tyson stated that real freedom is having nothing. I will feel when I didn't have a cent. That's Mike Tyson's concept of freedom. He said, real freedom is having nothing. I will fear when I didn't have a cent. What do you think about that concept? How does it fit into your world? There was another young man, George Washington Carver. George Washington Carver stated, in terms of his concept of freedom, is that education is the key to unlock the golden door of freedom. Now, repeat that. George Washington Carver stated, education is the key to unlock the golden door of freedom. And last but not least, Neil Strauss stated that once the purpose of life is to let go of all that baggage you are dragging around and be free again. Okay? Neil Strauss stated, once the purpose of life, no, he said one of the purpose of life is to let go all that baggage you are dragging around and be free again. So sometimes things may hold us up from being able to truly be free, according to Strauss. What do you think about these concepts of freedom? We want you to think about it. And later on in the program, if you'd like to share your thoughts on this question of what is freedom, we definitely encourage you to do that. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to a station break with Music with a Purpose. And when we come back, we're going to share with you some Black mini facts. And then we come to a commentary from the community by Brother Ellis Jonah. We'll be right back. This is MPH Radio. the greatest love of all. Not only love yourself, but love your people and love humanity. Welcome back right now. We hope that you have gathered some paper and a pen or pencil. And we're going to turn over to our member and contributor, Susie, and she can share with you right now a black minute fact for today's program. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. I'm only going to do one black minute fact today, and that's going to be on Louis Latimer. The light bulb itself was invented by Thomas Edison, but the innovation used to create long-lasting light bulbs with a carbon filament came from an African-American inventor, which was Louis Latimer. Latimer, the son of formerly enslaved people, began work in a patent law firm after serving in the military for the Union during the Civil War. He was recognized for his talent drafting patents and was promoted to head draftsman, where he co-invented an improved bathroom for railroad trains. When Edison turned 90 today, his success will garner him further attention from the U.S. Electric Lightning Company, putting him at a company in direct competition with Edison in 1880. Where there, Latimer patented a new filament for the light bulb, using carbon instead of more incendiary materials like bamboo that were commonly used for filaments. The addition of the carbon filament increased the lifespan and practicality of light bulbs, which had previously died after just a few days. In 1984, he went on to work with Edison at the Edison Electric Light Company. And there you have the mini fact for Saturday, February the 20th, 2021.
Thank you, Susie. We now will make our transition to a message to the community, and this message will come from Brother Alex Joyner. Brother Alex, welcome to MPH Radio.
Well, it has been a tremendous week of information, and now that the month is almost over, and a lot of us have been interested in black history, finding out more black facts. And I have to really and truthfully appreciate what you're doing, Mr. Lee, and what Susie's doing and your staff is doing to make my life a whole lot better as I gather more knowledge and information that I can use in my everyday life as I make decisions about how to handle my finances, where I really want to live, what's going on in my schools and communities. It all makes the difference to know the history of what my race has been going through. And all races are men. So I encourage everyone, not just, you know, to be concentrated on black history this month, but to be concentrated on all history. Because it was all a contribution into black history also. We've done many great things as African Americans all over the world, and we will continue to do them. We will be great doctors. We will be great inventors. We will be great scholars. We will be great businessmen. But we have to know the knowledge, the desire that burned in these people that came to America in bondage and fought their way out. And if we lose this history, if it's paved over like so many cemeteries, then our children forget, and we one day will forget how to live ourselves. So in keeping with that, Black History Month, closing out the month, I decided to look into a little of my own personal history from one of the fellow citizens out of North Carolina. And I titled it, Keeping the fires of freedom burning. Abraham Hawking Galloway was born in Smithfield, now called Southport, North Carolina, on February 8, 1837, to John Wesley Galloway, a white ship's pilot, and Hester Hankins, a colored female slave owned by Morrison Milton Hankins. He was taught the trade of a brick mason, and he became a master mason. Whatever job he was assigned to do on the plantation, he mastered the trade in no time. As he grew older, he began to plan his freedom. He was not satisfied with plantation life and believed that no man should be in bondage to another. As he learned of other slaves who escaped, he dreamed of his own freedom. He got his chance at the age of 19, and he and fellow slave Richard Eden escaped hidden on a turpentine schooner to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He then escaped into Canada and returned later to the South and began helping other slaves escape to the North. As the Civil War began, the Union Army realized it needed better military intelligence inside the South. Abraham Galloway was the perfect type of spy they needed. He had become skillful in many tasks and would use this knowledge to operate behind enemy lines. His quick assessment of the Southern troop movements and where they were planning their next attack was extremely useful to President Lincoln and the generals in the Union Army. He spent years setting up a network of spies in the South, passing valuable information to the generals. He went on one mission, going hundreds of miles into Confederate territory to rescue his own mother. During this time, Galloway became known as a master spy. He was a very exceptional spy who always got his enslaved man or woman or top secret information out of the enemy's hands and into the freedom of the North. During the Civil War, he became a leading civil rights leader as he began to create organizations to fight injustice. He led a delegation of African American men from the South to the White House to pressure President Lincoln into promising political equality and full citizenship to African Americans if the Union won the war. Through these meetings, he succeeded in helping millions of enslaved colored people share freedom their ancestors brought to American chains. He pleaded to Congress of the United States that the United States Colored Troops units, such as the 35th, the 33rd, the 36th, and the 37th Regiment he helped organize, were in the fight of their lives in every battle. These men and their families wanted to be law-abiding citizens with full rights to be enjoyed, as the United States Constitution implied that all men should be free and be able to pursue their own way of life to contribute to the country. The slaves like him, who had become spies, risked their lives daily in and out to ensure the Union was victorious. He only wanted what was fair to men who owned their own freedom by their blood on the battlefields of the war. The man born into enslavement, forgetting to learn to read and write, was now one of the most sought-after political civil rights leaders and speakers in the country. Instead of Galloway introducing Frederick Douglass as the main speaker of the night, it was Douglass who often introduced Abraham Galloway. Yet, we know of Douglass and not of Galloway. Maybe because Galloway was a proud war insurgent, a hero to many African Americans who saw him as totally fearless in battle. He only wanted a fair chance to prove himself, and his opponents often became his friends. He fought in the trenches of war, and behind enemy lines. In the year 1868, Galloway was elected state senator of North Carolina as part of the group, the first African-American representative. In the General Assembly, he worked for civil rights, labor rights, fair minimum wage, regulated hours of work, women's rights, and equal business opportunities for people of color. He introduced the First Amendment for women's suffrage. Abraham Galloway was a man not to be messed with, as he often wore two pistols tucked into his trousers where they could be seen by all. He did not follow racial custom. He fought duels and stood up to the KKK as he led a black militia in search of the no-show Klan. Anyone who tried to deny him his freedom was met with fury and insult. He was known to have great wit and was very humorous and enjoyed a good laugh and a joke with others. He believed in living life to its fullest. He married Martha Ann Dixon, and they had two sons together. He lived in Wilmington and his death in 1870 at a very young age of 33 years. A fever and jaundice. Over 6,000 people attended his funeral and paid their respects to a free man who set the fire of freedom among his own race of people. It was a day when freedom died and the nation cried. His legacy was known to many, yet it was overlooked and not taught in schools, as many wanted to erase the achievements of early African Americans who fought bravely and tirelessly for their freedom. To erase one's history is to smother the flame of one's resistance, to forever keep them in mental bondage once the physical restraints have been removed. Self-pride and dignity in one's race make them proud of who they are. Without a recorded history, one's confidence can be distorted and misinterpreted by anyone who wants to destroy their achievement. Abraham Galloway was a fire starter for freedom, and his encouraging light is still burning 100 years later. Thank you, Mr. Abraham Hankins Galloway, for your sacrifice and determination to lead the people of color out of darkness and into the light of freedom by any means necessary. A man who took no mess from his oppressor. And I thank you, my listening order.
Yeah, I heard a message to the community from Alex Joyner. Those views are the views of Mr. Joyner and not necessarily views of this station or any of its members. Right now, what we're going to do, we're going to a station break. We're messing with the music. And when we come back, we discuss today's theme, which is, what's going on in the neck of your woods? We'd like to hear from you. What's going on in the neck of your woods? And we'll do just that in the next few minutes. You'll listen to MPH Radio.
One, two, one, two, three, four.
Down with their heads in the sky. Cities are
But this is legislation people are talking about pending to introduce in Las Vegas. Is this a good idea if we're talking about how to create new, generate new revenues for any kind of region or any kind of area? Is it a good idea to allow certain companies, certain technology, companies in technology, to become an entity, a local government itself, where they can control, dictate that particular area? What kind of implication does that pose for the future well-being of our communities? We can open up this discussion right now. Feel free to call in at 818-337-0016, and we'd like to discuss the possibilities and implications of this particular idea article. And what I would like to do right now, I will go to our contributors, members. We go with Brother Alex. Brother Alex, looking at the essence of this article, what he's proposing to allow corporations, in this case, they're looking at the big tech companies, to maybe go into regions and open up their own local governments. And how do you feel about that concept, Brother Alex? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, Mr. Lee, when we look at our neighborhoods and the more well-to-do neighborhoods of the wealthy, it seems like it's always two different types of justice in America. And that's the justice for the ones who want to have what they want and the ones to have whatever they can get. So when we look at someone coming in and wanting to set up their own government because their business is big enough to do so, well, I have to look at a concept in Congress now called lobbyists. And that's similar of what they do as they lobby different things through Congress. But to me, I feel like it's dangerous because I feel that even though the government now is not perfect, it is a government of some people who want to do right. There are a lot of people there that don't want to do right, don't care to do right, and they're there because of power and privilege. The meaning of wealth in this country has always meant everything to certain members of society. Dignity, respect of others is now being cast aside, and people are beginning to do their own thing. Misinformation is a thing that has hurt this nation for the past 4 years. And as I gather more factual information about this, I think I can make a better decision, because I don't believe all the facts are in whether this would be a good idea or would be a bad idea. But for right now, I stand on it being a bad idea because I know what my community and what my people need. And to be that, I have to be involved as a citizen myself to make sure that what the majority of African Americans in my community or people of color have a say-so in whatever ideas that these tech companies will want to bring forth. And they're willing to sit down at a round table and discuss the options of what they can offer, then yes, I'm willing to listen to any plan whatsoever. But I have enough common sense to know what is right and what is wrong, and to make the best decisions, not only for me, but for my family, but for my country, my community, my neighbors, because we're all in it together. I never looked at myself as being an individual that had any special privilege whatsoever. I've always felt that it's been my duty to help educate, to help uplift, to encourage, to be compassionate, to move forward with good ideas that only can make this country stronger than what it is. Not to tear it apart, but to build it up. because that's what it was all about when it was first founded, to make a more perfect union. It didn't have everyone's input. No one talked to the Indians. No one talked to the slaves. No one talked to many of the immigrants from less desirable countries. But ideas were formed. Things were mentioned. Stuff was thrown out. Some things were agreed upon. But the common goal of the country should be to make everyone equal in everything that we do, whether it's business, law enforcement, self-government, whatever. And I feel like if there's a plan on the table, I'm willing to listen. But that doesn't mean that I'm for it or against it until I have more information. And then I'll use that information, and just like the committees in Congress, decide with friends and family and come up with a decision and say, hey, no, this is a terrible idea. Because I know the information of big companies and tech companies and how they can misuse that your information and how it can be gone against you when you go into hospital for medical care, you go apply for a loan, misinformation there, as far as credit reporting. So there's a lot of things that we have to look at as how tech companies do business, because they have files and information on all of us as we buy and trade all over this country. So we have to be very cautious of this idea. And that's about all I have to say.
Okay, next we'll go to Susie. Susie, what's your thought on this concept of tech companies being allowed to come to local governments?
The thing about it, I was looking at the size. When you, from this article, you look at Carson City, and when you look at the population of it and everything, it's not surprising that they are coming up with this, because it's actually what you would consider a small community. And the thing about it, as always, we got individuals that are selfish, and their main goal is financial. And this would be one way where they'll be able to financially keep themselves above everyone else by creating this particular government, which would be wrong, because in the long run, it would also affect a lot of those people there. When you're looking at, they got like 55,000 people or whatever, which isn't a lot of people. And the thing I don't like too is they talking about dealing with companies like Tesla. Now you know what Tesla's basically about. So it tells you right up front that a lot of people will be left behind, and it's just a bad idea all the way around to try to create a government within the government. This government was established many, many years ago, and ain't no way we should allow one state to take one city and develop their own government. It's just wrong all the way around.
Okay, listen to MPH Radio. We're discussing under the theme, what's going on in the neck of your woods. This article where they're talking about allowing tech companies to establish themselves as if they are a little local government and control their territories by being able to tax you, being able to set up school systems, being able to do all the things that local governments can do to people. What do you think of this concept under this idea of this innovation zones, where maybe that region can develop and acquire more money, more resources? This is what's going on in your world. It will have an impact on you if you don't believe or not, if it's allowed to take place. Some may argue it's already taking place. But anyway, we'd like to hear your views and your thoughts on this by dialing 818-337-0016. Hit 1, and we acknowledge you ask for a number. So we have another caller who would like to weigh in on this issue. We're going to our caller 6057. 6057, welcome to MPH Radio. Your thoughts, caller 6057.
Certainly. Let's see. I think it's it represents an intensification of capitalism, which is not good for the masses of working people at all. And the question that came to my mind as I read the article was, how do people hold that sort of government accountable when in the event they're mistreated or denied their rights by that particular government? And it represents an intensification of privatization, and it's the ultimate in ruling class control. And let's see, and I think it would be bad for the masses of working and poor people that live in such a community.
Okay, caller, stay on, caller. May come back to you. Let's go to our next caller. We have quite a few people who like they want to express their thoughts on this particular issue. What's going on in your woods, in the nick of your woods? Let's go to this caller. Caller, we're going to take caller 4684. They've been waiting for a while. Caller 4684. Any questions or comments on this issue? Or tech companies being allowed to function as a local government? Caller 4684. Okay, going once, going twice. We'll move on. Let's go to that next caller. They've been waiting patiently. Caller 6029. Caller 6029. Your response to this phenomenon. 6029. Yes, the mic is yours.
Yeah. I think that we got to be very, very clear in terms of what's going on. One of the things is we got to understand, given the disparity of wealth that happens in society, where, you know, increasingly a smaller number of people have more and more access to wealth, it means they have an enormous amount of power. And because they have such great power, they're able to utilize that power, you know, to benefit themselves. And that leads to dystopia. So when we talk about dystopia in terms of the total control, you know, of institutions over their lives, their activities, even the way people think, over populace, we got to be very, very clear that when we talk about in terms of corporations incorporating counties or states, then we understand the potential for that corporation or state to abuse its power for the sole purpose of not only to enrich itself economically, but to actually control the way people think, way they behave, and what they do, and so forth and so on. So one of the things that when we talk about these corporations taking over, you know, these counties, the problem that we understand is when we talk about finances, we got to be very, very concerned, because one of the things that if the fact the corporation incorporated that area of space, then clearly the auspices is no longer one of a public domain, it becomes one of a private domain, which means that the policies that govern, you know, that particular entity are going to be clearly the domain of that corporation. So in that context, when you talk about being taxed, one of the problems is that if in fact it's a private entity, then the question in terms of the state having access to those taxes become nil. The state simply won't have access to those states because it's talking about a private entity. But on the flip side of that, what's going to happen is that the same corporate entity, by virtue of being a corporate entity, can also have access to tax breaks and credits, which means that it can continue to acquire more and more wealth, you know, which means sort of exacerbate the wealth inequality that exists in the society. So one of the things that, you know, for that government to even propose such an idea speak volumes in terms of the kind of power that corporations have in terms of their ability, in terms of actually getting high-level officials, particularly ideas which are antithetical, which are in opposition to the interests of humanity itself. So clearly, you know, and aside from that, brother, one of the things that when you start talking about corporations owning a space in terms of being incorporated into a county, one of the things, the question is those within that space have to play by the rules of the corporation. The corporation focus is profit, number one. Also, it wants to control in terms of the way you think. And so, therefore, in that space, it's unrealistic to think that people who are in those spaces are actually able to think independently. That's not going to be allowed. And probably more heinous than that is the mere fact that you have – what happens in a situation when you have children, for whatever reason, have a learning disability who cannot keep up in terms of the with the educational program that's implemented by the corporation. What do they do with those people? In the eyes of the corporation, those kind of people become superfluous. They become excess baggage. And the question becomes, what does the corporation do with those people in which does not serve the corporation's needs? So these are some very real dangers, some very real questions we have to ask ourselves. And so when we start talking about dystopia in terms of, you know, this potential, the propensity in American society, we got to understand this is on the increase. It's not decreasing. It's increasing. And so this is the thing that we got to be concerned about. So without understanding, you know, the impact of dystopia, then I don't think people can realistically grasp the seriousness of which, you know, the implications of such a move.
Okay, we thank you, caller. Please hold on. We will continue to have the discussion. What we're going to do right now, we're going to pause for a call. We're going to play some, go and take a break with music, with a message. And when we come back, we will continue the discussion on what's going on in the neck of your woods. As we raise this question with you, is it a good idea to put African historical figures on U.S. monies? It's a good idea to put African historical figures on U.S. monies. We want you to think about that, because particularly since we're dealing with so-called Black History Month, and let's take a look at that in terms of the images, the consequences of what we are really saying to our people as we talk about putting African historical figures on U.S. monies. We'll be right back. You listen to MPH Radio. You listen to MPH Radio. We'll be right back.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Life of respect and decency. We welcome you back to MPH Radio. And we discuss the theme, what's going on in the neck of your woods. We'd like to entertain you with another interesting article that talks about and deals with this question that I'm raising to the world. Is it a good thing to put African historical figures on U.S. monies? Think about that, and let me just read a little bit from this article that is titled, Biden Administration Revised Plan to Put Harriet Tubman on $20 Bill. The Biden Administration Revised Plan to Put Harriet Tubman on $20 Bill. The Biden-Harris Administration is revising plans to put abolitionist Harriet Tubman on the $20 Bill, a move proposed by his fellow Democrat and former President Barack Obama in 2016. The initial release date of the bill was in 2020, but the Trump administration stalled the process and proposed its release in 2028. The Treasury Department is taking steps to resume efforts to put Harriet Tubman on the front of the new $20 notes, while the White House Press Secretary, Jean Psaki, she said it is important that the country's money reflect the history and diversity of our country, and Harriet Tubman's image gracing a new $20 note will certainly reflect that. So we are exploring ways to speed up that effort. Discussion for today. Is it a good idea? What message are we sending when we talk about putting great African historical figures on U.S. money? Is this really a good thing? We'd like for your willingness. Weigh in on this issue. Brother Alex, we'll start with you first on your take on the issue. What do you think about the issue and what message we may be sending? Is it good or bad in terms of the whole concept of using money as a tool to put African historical figures on?
Okay. Well, Mr. Lee, I think all of us like money. I especially like seeing Benjamin Franklin's face a lot. But getting down to serious reality, we have to look at where we've been banished from. And money is one of those resources that we've been banished from. And it was intentional not to place our face where the money's at. Because money goes into circulation. Circulation goes all over the world. People respect the dollar bill. The American money. Do you have American dollar? It's heard all over the world. American currency. Whose face is on those currencies? Well, we have to look back in history and say, for some, they're prestigious presidents. I look at money, and I see a racist and a bigot in Andrew Jackson. Now, all money, as they say, is good money. But to place African Americans on that money will help turn the tide in people's mind that this is a place you don't belong. Not only is it a wonderful idea or a great idea, but it's an idea that should have happened a long time ago. So I appreciate every dollar I get. I'm waiting on those dollars to have Harriet Tubman, Martin Luther King, Benjamin Banneker. It doesn't matter. I'm waiting on them because it's been long overdue. And not only on the paper money, but even on the change. I'm waiting on the challenge there to somebody say, mint somebody on a coin. Because coins are traded also. And they're seen in more children's pockets sometimes than adults. as we go about now, everywhere I go, seems like everybody's running out of change. Don't have it. Well, start minting some African-Americans on that copper, nickel, silver, and gold. Put our faces there and see how fast that money is spent. Or would someone save it in a piggy bank? This is the most important thing that we have to realize as we grow older and secure our finances, that the money that's being traded has a message. And that message must go forward, that we have earned the right to be on that money. And I support whomever that they place there first, because I know others will follow. But first, we got to get that first bill. And so I appreciate even the bill that's coming forth, and I pray that Congress approves it. And I turn it back over.
Okay, you have heard a perspective. One perspective on the issue, well, not your African figures, but on American money. Let's go to another participant and see what they say. Susan, we'll come to you. What do you think about putting African historical figures on U.S. monies? Susan, we can't hear you.
Okay. I think it would be nice that they put her on $20 bill, not only because of the historical fact and what she stood for and did regarding blacks and Africans in America. Also, it would be good if they did it because we could also, something as small as that, we could use as a learning tool. Because when you take your young children in elementary school and you start learning them the differences in denominations, not only will be teaching them financially, but also will be giving them something to think about and what she did and what she was about. So I hope it does pass, and it's too bad that it took this long, but hopefully in the future we will have Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill, because I think it was serve in various ways for different people to have her there.
Okay, we heard another perspective on the issue of putting African figures on U.S. monies. As we go about having this discussion, I would like to just raise one thing or some things with our listening audience and those who are in on this particular position. As we talk about this and we talk about what kind of message or images it's sending out to, many times people have different perspectives of what is money, how money is valued, and what it symbolizes. And when you look at the history of this country and the history of how money has been used as a tool not only to oppress the people we're talking about putting on that, but been used as a tool to do all kind of bad things. One of the questions I often think about when I think about this issue is would they suggest to put that face on it? Would it be acceptable to Harry, would she want to face on anything that been used as a means or as a tool to dehumanize the people, to sell the people? Will Malcolm X would vote for his face being on the dollar? Would Frederick Douglass would support that? So I often wonder what would they think. So just keep that in mind as well. I'm just wondering what other people think about this issue. So I will go to the next caller. Caller 6057, we bring you back. What is your position on, is it a good thing to put African historical figures on U.S. monies, and what kind of messages are we sending when we do this?
We're sending that these African figures went along with the economic system that's responsible for our oppression in the first place. So I don't think it's a good idea to put some African historical figures on U.S. currency, because if you analyze their lives and their contributions to our struggle, they fought against the system that that this currency represents, especially historical figures such as Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, and to bring it to the present, Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. If you look at their works carefully, they were fighters against the very economic system that this currency represents. And I think featuring on them on U.S. currency would distort their message, which was to organize for freedom by any means necessary and to fight against the system. Now, what Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass and Nat Turner and Denmark Vesey did during the 19th century in the context of what that era was like was revolutionary. And I think featuring such figures on U.S. currency distorts the essence of their message, to their descendants. And so I think it would be a bad idea to feature Africans on U.S. currency, particularly the ones I just named. Because they fought against the system for the most part, not for
thank you, thank you, caller, for your perspective on the issue. We'll go to our next caller, caller 6029. What do you think? Would it be a good idea to put African historical figures on U.S. monies? What kind of message would you be sending? What is your perspective on this issue, caller?
Well, you know, one of the things, we got to be very clear, you know, everything is political, and we got to be very clear on that. So when they do things on the surface which appears to be representative of change, we got to think deeper. I think one of the things is that when you talk about the accomplishments of Harriet Tubman, clearly she doesn't epitomize what the American currency stands for. She stands for truth, justice, all those things which are antithetical to the interests of the American elite. So clearly there was a real disconnect in terms of what Harriet Tubman stands for and what the U.S. dollar represents. But more so, one of the things, though, brother, I think that, you know, one of the things that we talk about the decline of the dollar, you know, I'm sort of suspicious. One of the things that we're very clear on is that the cryptocurrencies have become increasingly relevant in terms of global finance. In fact, people are speculating that the dollar just is on borrowed time. And so the mere fact that at this point in history, they decided, okay, we're going to put this African woman's face on currency, I suggest that it has less to do in terms of honoring Harriet Tubman, but more to do to condition African people to believe that, in fact, that we have arrived, that we are part of this. And it's such that, you know, paying homage to Harriet Tubman is proof evident that things are changing. I think we can no longer afford to allow ourselves to be deluded into believing, you know, such rubbish. I mean, the bottom line is the struggle for African people continues. And no amount of black faces on the currency is going to change that reality. So I think that aside from the political dimensions in terms of, you know, putting her face on currency, I think we'd be best suited, you know, not to be dissuaded from, you know, our struggles toward, you know, genuine freedom and inclusiveness in the society. And I don't think any amount of currency is going to, in fact, bring about the desired results that as a people that we seek. So I'm very hesitant in terms of supporting, you know, any type of movement or any type of gesture, which tends to, on one hand, lionize, glorify, you know, African ancestors, but on a deeper level, seeks to deceive our people into believing that everything is fine, and so therefore you can end the struggle. So for that reason, you know, I'm sort of hesitant in terms of supporting this notion in terms of putting her face on a $20 bill.
Thank you, Carly, for your perspective on this issue. As you have heard so far, we had two and four, two against, but each one of them was able to articulate their reasons. So for us, as a people, we must decide what is in our best interest as relates to our overall well-being. So we want to give you something to think about. This is one of the things that's going on in your woods. So think about it. So what we're going to do right now, we will continue the discussion, but we're going to pause for the calls. We're going to take a station break with some more music with a message. And when we come back, we have a real interesting history that we're going to share with you. And it falls under the concept, it seems like the more things change, the more they remain the same. We have Susan. She's going to talk about this question of who was George Edward Taylor. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. So right now, we're going to pause for this call. We'll be right back. This is MPH Radio.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say, now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
we'll make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right?
That's right. If you had a choice of color, which one would you choose? Which one would you choose? That struggle continues today, and we welcome you back to MPH Radio. In terms of speaking to our theme, what's going on in the neck of your woods, we would like to share with you this particular article of history that implies the more things changes, the more things remain the same. For some reason or another, it seems like we have heard this story before. And we want to talk about this a little bit. And we're going to do this with Susie. She has an interesting little article she can share with our listening audience on who was George Edward Taylor. George Edward Taylor. Susie, share with the listening audience a little bit of history about who was George Edward Taylor.
Hello. George Irwin Taylor was the first black man to ever run for president in the United States. George Irwin Taylor was the first African-American man selected by a political party to be its candidate for the presidency of the United States. He grew up in a conflicted environment where the Civil War was always near. Taylor was born in Little Rock, Arkansas on August 4, 1857, to Amanda Hines, who was free, and Brian Nathan Taylor, who was enslaved. Taylor, however, was raised in La Crosse, Wisconsin, by a politically active black family and later attended Wayland University in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, from 1877 to 1879. After finishing college, he returned to La Crosse, where he went to work for the La Crosse Free Press and then the La Crosse Evening Star. He worked as a writer at the newspaper, which brought him into politics. For this reason, he sided with one of the competing labor factions in La Crosse, the Wisconsin Labor Advocate, which was his own newspaper, became one of the newspapers of the party when Taylor became a leader and office holder in Wisconsin's statewide Union Labor Party. Taylor refocused his newspaper on national political issues when he was a member of the Wisconsin delegation during the first national convention of the Union Labor Party. As his prominence increased, his race became an issue, so he decided to reply to the criticisms by increasingly writing about African-American issues. He believed that independent political party that could mobilize the African-American vote was the only practical way that blacks could exercise political influence. Sadly, George Irwin Taylor died in Jacksonville, Florida on December 23, 1925 at the age of 68. And that's a brief history of our first black individual running for president, being that President's Day was this past Monday.
You know, Abby stated earlier, the more things change, the more things remain the same. We talking about as far back then, we have had African people running for the highest position in this country. What does this history suggest based upon the long history of attempting to want to bring about change under this particular guise? We'd like to hear your thoughts and your opinion on this. We'll start off with you, Brother Anthony. Call us 6057. Your thoughts on this.
Yes. Let's see. I think this event shows that that Africans have a long history of trying to seek political empowerment. That goes back as far as then of the Civil War and the Reconstruction era. And it seems as if looking at the platform of the party that George Irwin Taylor ran under, it seems as if that there's a pattern in which only when we try to organize ourselves do our political interests get represented. And looking at the platform, it's somewhat similar to other platforms that independent, political parties have put forth historically. And so I think the lesson I draw from George Irwin Taylor's life is that that it is important for us to form our own independent political organization because the Democratic and Republican parties are under control of the European ruling class for the most part and don't represent our interests. And that has been shown, that has been proven by looking at the history of both of those flats. And the only way we get our interests represented is when we form our own independent political organizations.
You know, Carla, in terms of that point, I would like to just add another little aspect to its history that people may have not known, and you are speaking to that point. You know, Taylor and others independent-minded Africans in America in 1904 joined the National Liberty Party, the NLP, the first national political party created exclusively for and by blacks. Now, even back then, they recognized the importance of having their own party. And this is a party was one of the first ones ever created. But we know nothing about these kind of history. This is why it's important to know your history, so we won't continue to repeat these things, same things over and over again. So anyway, Carla, we thank you for your thoughts, and we'll go now to Carla 6029 and get his perspective on what can we learn from Brother Taylor legacy. Carla 6029, your thoughts. What can we learn from Brother Taylor legacy?
Yeah, well, I think the thing we can learn from his legacy is that, you know, the struggle in terms of, you know, autonomy, the struggle in terms of independence, and certainly the struggle for equity among African people is a long historic history. And so when you talk about creating parties to address the issues of, you know, of African people in society, it's very interesting that in 1968, when the National Black Independent Party, we had the same kind of mindset that says that there's something fundamentally wrong in terms of the way American society is situated. And so, therefore, it means that we have to fundamentally, you know, create new strategic ways in terms of bringing about real empowerment for the masses of African people. So I think his legacy speaks loud and clear in terms of the propensity of injustice to be inflicted upon African people. And as much as we like to believe, in fact, that things are getting better, ironically, you know, as you alluded to, the more things change, the more they remain the same. In fact, the form of the kinds of oppression inflicted by African people simply changes form, but the oppression itself doesn't change one iota. So when we say that this society is becoming more scientific in terms of oppression, then we got to understand that this is oppression nonetheless, and it does adversely impact African people. And so when we look at the socioeconomic indicators and, you know, impacting our lives, African people consistently at the bottom. So clearly, you know, this notion in terms of independent party is something that's been tried before. And the mere fact that we tried it again in 68 to no avail means that we have to continue to struggle to devise new ways in terms of bringing about our real empowerment in society. So I think his legacy is certainly respected and certainly admired. But nonetheless, you know, he does underscore the importance in terms of continuing the struggle, you know, in the context of, you know, this American injustice that's inflicted upon African people routinely.
Thank you for your feedback, caller, from that perspective. And we have a caller who's been waiting for a while, and we'd like to see if this caller has any comments or questions that he would like to share with us. We're going to bring in this caller. Caller, your last four numbers are 4298. 4298, any thoughts or anything you'd like to share with us today based upon what you may have heard on this program or share with us what's going on in Nick of your woods? Call 4298. The mic is yours.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just trying to listen and learn. That's the main thing today. I've learned so much by listening to the people who call in and express their views. And it's just a pleasure. Thank you.
We thank you, Carla, for being a participant by listening to MPH Radio. We thank you. Now, in closing out our segment and program today as relates to our theme, what's going on in the neck of your woods. We will get final thoughts on Mr. Tuttle and final comments from Brother Alex. Brother Alex, the mic is yours. Are you there, Brother Alex?
Yes, I would thank Susie for that educational review on Mr. Taylor. I did a report many years ago on him, and I found out that, first of all, Mr. Taylor was a Republican, and when problems arose in the party, he became a Democrat. Then when problems arose when he was a Democrat, he decided to form the National Negro Liberation Party, the National Liberation Party. And in doing so, sometimes that's what we have to do. If someone does not see your views, and Mr. Taylor's views were about reparation for slaves, his views also were about the racial riots that were happening all over the country. His views were about business opportunities for freedmen, educational opportunities, seeking jobs in government where the mindset could be changed of the nation. We've been warriors on the battlefield in the Civil War. Mr. Taylor felt that we needed to be warriors on the battlefield in Congress. So I appreciate a lot that Mr. Taylor did in his lifetime, because a lot of states wouldn't even put him on the ballot. And that was because the question of citizenship, which was raised by Donald Trump with Barack Obama, did he even deserve to be on the ballot? Was he a U.S. citizen? Could a slave be a citizen? These questions floated around him like they floated around Obama. But they were answered the same way. He was born here. He was given the right to run through the 13th, 14th Amendment. So they could not disqualify him, even though they chose their most fiercest words against him as he ran. And as I said, many states wouldn't even put him on the ballot. So those are things that, yes, didn't change from yesterday, still going on today. And that's what we suffer every day, whether we're at work, whether we're in the hospital seeking medical care, whether we're in the police custody, whether we're in the court system facing the judge. Where is the equality? Why are we still living in the past justice of people that were brought here in chains, who've earned their freedom, but yet and still society or certain members of society dare to say you're still a second class citizen? So that's what we have to look at, how much change. From the first moment we got here until today. But again, I look at the future, that we can change things if we work together. And that's where we need to be, on the same page, getting organized and making our lives better and treating each other better, supporting each other, supporting ideas, and building a bridge that we all can walk across and not be beaten and stomped and kicked around when we get to the other side. But we realize that we are a united people, that regardless what we have to go through, that we can preserve our dignity and be treated as first class citizens for the rest of our lives, because our ancestors fared far little. And I thank you.
And we thank you, Alex. We thank all our participants. We thank our listening audience. We thank our supporters for continuing to support MPH Radio. And we'd like to remind you that this is a biweekly program. We'll be on in 2 weeks. Next date will be March 6th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Feel free to not only join us, but spread the word. Because of the coronavirus and the pandemic that's going on, we have everything on hold until further notice. But we would like to remind you that if you have any views and any comments about this program and other programs, please email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. Until then, let's strive always to go forward. And the best way to go forward is by us contributing to filling in our missing pages of history. We'll see you on the 6th of March at 1 p.m. This is the voice of MPH Radio. And remember, we are here for all of you. We'll see you on the 6th.
here.